Welcome to Copyright Clearance Center's podcast series. I'm Christopher Keneally for Beyond the Book. It's Friday, April 12th, 2019. Our weekly guest on the show is Andrew Albanese, Publishers Weekly senior writer, who joins me today from the magazine's office in New York City. Welcome back, Andrew.
Hey there, Chris.
So all this week, we've been marking National Library Week, which opened on Sunday. And at that time, the American Library Association released its 2019 State of America's Libraries Report. You were alarmed by a line in the report that's raised a worrisome question. Is book burning coming back to America?
Yeah, that does sound like a worrisome prospect, doesn't it? And unfortunately, as this year's State of America's Libraries reports, 2018 saw religious groups actually burn books, which is amazing to me because burning books was never a good look, right? And to do it in today's world, you pretty much have to be looking for a spectacle that's going to get you some kind of media attention. But the image of burning books to me, I mean, to anyone, I think really only evokes ISIS terrorists, you know, the ones who destroyed the treasures of Mosul, or Nazis. And yet here we are in 2019, burning books.
Well, indeed, as you say, here we are. So let's talk about who is burning those books. The line in the report comes from a section introducing the year's top 10 most challenged books, which actually features 11 books this year. Tell us about that list. And are people burning books on that list?
So yes, a good chunk of the report is devoted to this year's most challenged books list. And the discussion around the list, I think, reveals a really disturbing trend. And that's that the use of extreme tactics is growing, and especially tactics targeting the LGBTQ community. In one case, the actual book burning that's cited in the report in Iowa targeted expressly LGBTQ books. And as you know, we teased it last week, but yes, this year's top 10 does go to 11. Apologies to Spinal Tap. Because the numbers 10 and 11 in this year's list were actually, you know, they were tied for the position in terms of the number of challenges they received. But the ALA notes that both those books, number 10 and 11, were burned by religious activists in Orange City, Iowa, last October in protest of the city's Pride event. ALA officials said they expanded the list to include both in order to spotlight the repressive intolerance exemplified by the act of burning books. And you know, I still can't believe we're talking about burning books. What more is there really to say about it, except that book burning is obviously stupid and clearly designed to intimidate. But beyond the book burning, 2018 saw some tactics that are on the face less menacing than lighting a fire, but even more concerning. For example, there's been a wave of lawsuits filed that have tried to halt libraries hosting drag queen story hours. Indeed, every week in the Week in Libraries column here at PW, there seems to be another drag queen story hour controversy that we're reporting. And there's also been a lawsuit to end community access to research databases, especially most prominently in Colorado, where one group sued EBSCO, company that's based right there near you in Massachusetts, for pushing porn, allegedly, to kids who just wanted homework help. That suit was quickly tossed by the courts in February, but as ALA notes, despite the courts and the public just shrugging off these claims, these strategies have proven quite successful in chilling the willingness of schools and libraries to provide access to a diverse range of information and ideas. And indeed, EBSCO has seen a number of cancellations of its databases under pressure from parents' groups.
And as a category, Andrew, were LGBTQ subjects the major driver for many of these challenges?
Yeah, they absolutely were. And you can check out the whole report on the ALA website, including the top 11 most challenged books of 2018. This year's list came from 347 challenges that were tracked by ALA, involving 483 book titles. And there were some old standards on the list. You know, there's Sherman Alexie was still there and Jay Asher. But yeah, the common theme overall, LGBTQ issues, including a new number one challenge book, George, by Alex Gino, which reportedly was banned for, among other reasons, mentioning dirty magazines and including a transgender character. Elsewhere on the list, John Oliver's Mike Pence Takedown, a huge bestseller, which was A Day in the Life of Marlon Brando. That was also banned. Drama, written and illustrated by Raina Telgemeier, a book, by the way, that my daughter absolutely loves. And the books tied for number 10 and 11 that I mentioned earlier, This Day in June by Gail Pittman and Two Boys Kissing by David Levithan, books that, as we said, were both burned. Now, before we move on to another subject, I'd just point out that the challenges facing libraries are an important part of the report. But it's not all bad news in the State of America's Libraries report. The report is also filled with some great stuff. So I do encourage you to go and check it out.
Well, lawsuits looking to chill free speech have targets other than libraries, of course. This week, Congressman Devin Nunes, a California Republican, went to court to silence a critic.
That's right. Nunes this week filed suit against McClatchy, which owns his hometown newspaper, the Sacramento Bee, for a report that it posted on a lawsuit that was filed by a server who worked a cruise that was awarded from a fundraising campaign that was hosted by a winery that Nunes is a part owner in. Now, apparently on this cruise, it was cocaine and prostitutes everywhere. Now, in the article itself in the Sacramento Bee, the article points out that Mr. Nunes is an investor in the winery and says it's unclear whether he was aware of the lawsuit or affiliated with the fundraiser. The lawsuit, which we should note, was settled. And, you know, it's just it's a very tenuous connection to Nunes, I agree. But this is the second defamation lawsuit in a month in which our listeners will recall that Nunes filed a $250 million lawsuit against Twitter a couple of weeks ago. Well, McClatchy is one of the nation's top newspaper chains. They own the Miami Herald, the Kansas City Star, the Fort Worth Star-Telegram, Charlotte Observer, and there are many others. And now Nunes has taken aim at them with a $150 million suit. So I think it's clear at this point that Nunes is trying to intimidate the press. And again, like the book burning that we see, this is not a good look and really not very smart, because really, would we or anyone be talking about an article that tenuously linked a Coke-fueled fundraiser to Devin Nunes if we weren't talking about this lawsuit? Probably not. But while there's going to probably be some political points to be won in this war on the press, I think it's important that we talk about this just mainly for the fact that we have to realize that there is indeed a war on the press going on.
When Copyright Clearance Center's Beyond the Book returns, Andrew Albanese watches Netflix and sees a good news story with a twist. I'm Christopher Keneally.
I'm Mark Rotella, Senior Editor at Publishers Weekly and host of the new PW podcast, Publishers Weekly Insider. Each week, we'll talk to PW editors, authors, and other industry guests about the biggest and most exciting stories and books in the world of publishing. New episodes of PW Insider premiere every Friday. So listen at publishersweekly.com/PW Insider or wherever you get your podcasts, and be sure to subscribe to PW Insider on iTunes.
I'm Christopher Keneally for CCC's Beyond the Book. It's Friday, April 12th, 2019, and Andrew Albanese of Publishers Weekly joins me today, as he does every Friday, with news and analysis from the world of publishing. In Monday's issue of PW, Andrew, there's a report that Netflix has gone on an acquisition spree over the past year, developing dozens of books, series, short story collections, and graphic novels that they will carry on the video and film streaming service. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so a really great report from our West Coast correspondent, Jason Boog, who writes that no less than 50 literary properties are now in development at Netflix and are being turned into series projects rather than films. Meanwhile, in the same time period, Netflix has announced plans to adapt basically a handful of books as films, something of a shift, and certainly a sign of the way the content world is developing more towards series than one-off films. But I think, too, there's evidence here that organizations like the Frankfurt Book Fair are being vindicated in their approach over the last few years to really woo digital players like Netflix. You know, of course, Netflix has had some great successes with their adaptations. There's Piper Kerman's Orange is the New Black, which was developed and released in 2013. Jay Asher's 13 Reasons Why, Lemony Snicket. All of these have been turned into really big ongoing series. And many of Netflix's deals began from the book world with Maria Campbell Literary Associates, a prominent scouting firm. Anyone who goes to Frankfurt or any of the international book fairs knows Maria Campbell's name. And Netflix has exclusively signed up to work with Maria Campbell to find English and foreign language titles to adapt from around the world.
Now, the literary minded often worry that Netflix and other online video watching generally is competition for reading. Is that a concern?
Very good point. You know, we've talked about that many times on this show, and we've heard about it many times in panels over the years. You know, in the article, Jason talks with executives who continue to stress how much they value books and literary material as, and I'll quote them here, an irreplaceable resource. You know, there's just no other substitute for the amount of work and creativity that goes into a book. That's Matt Thanell, who's the VP of Original Series at Netflix. Except, of course, when Netflix decides to replace the book. Jason reports how Netflix is starting to explore new relationships directly with authors, for example. Last summer, the company inked an exclusive multi-year deal with thriller novelist Harlan Coben to develop 14 different Coben projects into series and features for Netflix's global subscriber base, which I believe is over 140 million at the moment. But the question about this that I have is, well, when does Harlan Coben write his next book if he's working on all these scripts and projects for Netflix? You know, it's a situation that's eerily familiar, I think, to the one we heard from the publisher of George R.R. Martin's series, A Song of Ice and Fire, upon which the mega hit Game of Thrones is coming. I mean, Martin is probably way overdue at this point on the last book in the series, and that's probably due to all the work that he's been doing on the Game of Thrones series, which, of course, is about to start. People are very excited about that. And you have to wonder, too, how many writers are going to start to look more to the small screen than to the page? Or, conversely, when Netflix is going to start publishing books off of some of the stuff that they're commissioning for the screen. I mean, are there any other streaming services out there doing original television content and publishing books? Oh, wait. Hello, Amazon. Again, I don't think this is a dire, imminent threat. You know, winter is not coming for the publishing industry, to borrow a phrase from Game of Thrones. And right now, it really is a glorious time, a boom time for literary properties as these digital subscription services continue to soar. You know, I won't reveal much more here. You can read Jason's excellent and in-depth reported piece in Monday's issue and online on the PW website, of course. But I will close with this teaser. He reports that Netflix has recently secured adaptation rights to Gabriel Garcia Marquez's 100 Years of Solitude, a deal that included the company's promise to shoot the series in Spanish and film it in Marquez's native Colombia. Now, to me, this is tremendously exciting news, not just because Marquez is obviously an extremely talented writer and the book is a classic, but because it flips the prevailing wisdom, which would have been to do it short and to do it in English. And to do it on a soundstage in Los Angeles, for example. So what made that happen? Netflix officials point to their research that shows authentic foreign language properties resonate with universal audiences. And to me, that is potentially huge. It says great things about the potential diversity of works to come and for the global publishing industry. So something to keep our eyes on.
And of course, Netflix made the point crystal clear last year with the multilingual film Roma, set in Mexico City. Roma won 3 Oscars, including Best Foreign Language Film, a first for a Mexican production. So I suppose with that, I shall say gracias, Andrew Albanese. Thank you for joining me this week and every Friday on Beyond the Book.
De nada, Chris.
Beyond the Book is produced by Copyright Clearance Center. Our co-producer and recording engineer is Jeremy Brisky of Burst Marketing. Subscribe to the program wherever you go for podcasts and follow us on Twitter and Facebook. The complete Beyond the Book podcast archive is available at beyondthebook.com. I'm Christopher Kittily. Thanks for listening and join us again soon on CCC's Beyond the Book.